What's going on, everybody? Welcome to an all-new episode of Scene Snob Interviews. My special guests today are Vincent and James Coleman, the Coleman brothers, the guys behind the Halloween Inferno short films that have been coming out since the 2018 Halloween movie, and they follow the track of that. So Halloween Kills, of course, is the official sequel, but Halloween Inferno is a really cool follow-up as well. We will be having a review going on later this week. But I'm very excited to have James and Vincent here, and we're going to get into it. We're going to talk about the movie, and we're going to talk about more. So stay tuned, and here we go.
Yeah.
Hey, what's going on, buddy? How you doing?
Good, man. How you doing?
Good, good. Thank you, guys. I love the shirt. I love that poster. I was using it for the promos and such, because that is an awesome poster.
Yeah, it's by a guy named, his Facebook name is 5 Milligrams. I'm not sure what his real name is, but yeah, I mean, he does great artwork, so check him out on Instagram too.
So you definitely will do. All right. Let me get situated. I already did the intro, so we're good there. So we'll go right into conversations. Let me take this off. All right. So James, basically I was telling Vince the same thing, like you know, we're going to talk about the movie. Talk about the filmmaking process and, just your love for Halloween and such. And then we'll kind of touch down on Halloween Kills and the two timelines, one you guys created versus Green. And then we'll talk about horror if you guys are cool with it. And then I got a little game planned for Guess the Halloween Mask for the right movie.
All right.
So, all right, we'll go right into conversation. So, Vince, we were talking about how it took about a year and a half for you guys to film Inferno in its entirety, which, you know, again, I want to stay for everybody watching or listening. You guys did it really seamlessly, like for a year and a half, like it really matches up well, which, you know, like I was saying, a lot of short films that take that year, you know, take a year or so to get back to, it's tough. How did you guys prepare and plan to get back into filming each one?
So the first one kind of, so we shoot weddings also as part of like our company, and we get a lot of Catholic weddings. And if you've been to a Catholic wedding, they're like 2 hours of a ceremony. So during one of those ceremonies, we kind of both just like mentally check out. I mean, our cameras are running and we're paying attention, but mentally we're thinking of other things. So after one of those ceremonies, I came up to my brother, it was like mid-September, and I'm like, I think I have a really good idea for a Halloween short film. And we're like, do we really want to do this? Like, do we really want to make another one of these? We used to do a lot as kids, and we put a lot of them up on YouTube, but we're like, all right, yeah, why not? So that's how Halloween Inferno came to be. And then the reception was so good, and I don't know, like we kind of never got out of that Michael Myers feeling, which usually goes away around like the end of November, but March came around, and I'm like, all right, let's continue it. Let's do more. We had another idea. Let's do a flashback scene. Now, this is before we knew there was going to be a flashback scene in Halloween Kills, so that's kind of weird, but we thought that'd be a good way to lead into telling the story of Lily Hawkins. That's why we did that. So we're like, all right, let's establish that her dad was this guy. That was like show, don't tell type thing.
Yeah.
So we did the flashback scene, and the balcony scene that we recreated was actually by accident. We ended up going upstairs into that location. We saw that upstairs balcony, and we're like, hey, this looks just like the one in Halloween 1978, so let's shoot that just for the hell of it. And then, the big moment was the cauterizing scene. That's kind of what we really wanted to do, to show like what he could do with the hand and all that. And then part three was, again, we had been kind of like mowing through the ideas for like the last couple months, and then right around August time, I know we have a good ability to kind of rally people around us. And I think it has some, I'm not exactly sure. Like I know Sylvester Stallone said he had that talent as well to get people to say yes to him. So I somehow got our team together in mid August. And we shot the train station scene. That was actually the first thing we shot for part three. Oh, no. And then I don't know. I mean, the time came through and it was maybe late September. We're like, all right, let's just push through and get this thing done. And we killed ourselves a few nights in a row. We tried doing an Indiegogo, didn't really raise much money for it. We're not the best at marketing by any means. Now we hired Morgan Silva, and she's been doing great. So that'll change, hopefully. And then, yeah, I mean, just keeping things going. It's like Halloween is kind of second nature to us. It's something we really grew up on and really love. So we know exactly what not to do. And I think that's usually the hardest thing when writing a film or shooting a film is, does this idea suck? Or is this stupid? Or would the character do this? And then in that scenario with Michael Myers, we know exactly what Michael Myers wouldn't do and what we don't want to see or what kind of gives away the mystery. So we kind of just stuck to that principle and just kept moving it forward. And we wanted to keep that. We wanted to stay as true to the original character as possible. And what I mean is we didn't want to turn him into Jason Voorhees, which I'm starting to see might be happening with Halloween Kills, which I don't know yet how I feel about it. I haven't seen it yet. But that, like, yeah, I mean, Michael Myers is a slasher, but he's also a specter. He's a stalker, and he's, like, a spirit almost in a way. He's, like, this, you know, he's the ghost. Or not a ghost, but you get what I mean. He's, like, very much like an enigma and an entity that kind of appears and goes and comes with a mystery, and now we see him kind of out there slaughtering 10 firefighters at once. It's like, I'm not really sure if this is him, but I can't say it doesn't look cool.
No, and listen, I got to give this to you, Vince, because you played the shape in your movie, and you did a really good job. I'm not blowing smoke up your ass. Trust me, I love Michael Myers. I'm all about that entertainment. And you did a really great job playing him. I love the head motions. You know, what did you do to study for it? Like, I mean, I know you're a fan, but did you just watch him over and over again and take things that you like?
Yeah. I mean, obviously I've seen all the movies millions of times, and we've shot these movies, Michael Myers fan films and stuff since we were like 12. So I know what not to do. And I feel like when people overthink Michael Myers, like, just think of him. This is how I do it. I just play it like I'm going somewhere. I don't really need to go there, and kind of like playing it lazy. Like, I mean, that's the best way I could explain it. Like, don't overdo the head turns. Don't overdo the walking like a robot. Just walk like you don't really need to get where you're going. And I feel like that's really it.
Nice. Okay. And one thing I liked that you guys did, the 2018 film did it well, and you guys are a continuation on that, so I'm going to call you second timeline, technically like the 50th timeline, but yeah. You know what I mean. I'm going to call you the second timeline because I love what's been done here. In fact, I've been a big proponent speaking out saying, like, you should do this with Nightmare on Elm Street, you should do this with Jason, you know, pick where you want to kind of continue the timeline and go from there, you know, refresh it a little bit. I like that you took Sheriff Parker and made him the main character. I believe it's Isaac Thompson Jr. plays Sheriff Parker in your movie.
Yep.
And it was Omar Dorsey who played him. And they look so phenomenally close. As soon as I saw him, I'm like, oh, wow. I mean, that looks like Parker.
So that's actually kind of funny. That's actually one of the things when we first talked about it, which, again, it was at a wedding we were shooting. And I said, because we've worked with Isaac for years. He's been in a lot of our stuff. Like, he was in he was in our first feature film, and he was like a high level mobster. And then we did a film called Squatters, and he was a paramedic in it. And I thought, do you notice that Isaac kind of looks just like this guy? And then I'm like, why don't we put him in the movie? Because it'll look like super legit, and then it'll kind of get us I don't know. I mean, at first we were like, maybe people actually think this is from the movie, and then it was cool to have something that looked like him.
I kind of did for a minute there. I'm like, I had that's how I learned their names, because I look back and I'm like, they didn't really get them, did they? I'm like, you know, because I couldn't see an actor like saying, all right, I'm on this path right now, and I'm also going to do this other timeline they're doing. But they look so similar. I was like, but I like that you followed him, because we didn't get to see him a lot in the 2018 version. Just come out and kind of talk to Will Patton's character, but.
We kind of felt like he was underused. Like, they brought him in, he had a cool cowboy hat. He's a very identifiable character, but he didn't really do anything. And I don't know if they're planning to do more with him, but I feel like our thought was, let's turn Halloween Inferno into like a Manhunt type movie, where we see like the ramifications of what Michael Myers has done, and the police are trying to track him down, and they're obviously having trouble with it. So mm-hmm. We're like, yeah, like, we can mow down these police officers. It's basically like a Manhunt movie, like almost like a Rambo in a way.
Yeah. And one thing I really liked about that too is we didn't know anything about Halloween Kills up until what, maybe less than a year ago. And you guys are putting this out, and it's, you know, you're following a lot of the same themes of like the mob mentality of, you know, to hunt down Michael Myers and just like the chaotic nature of it. I really like that because it makes it feel more real. It doesn't, if that makes sense. Like it, when I was watching, I was like, yeah, this does feel real. Like it feels like it would go this route. And I like that we're not following Laurie in your film. You know, completely understandably. I mean, Jamie Lee Curtis probably wasn't available at the time, but you know, I was like, that's the thing I liked about the 2018 version. Is like Michael Myers isn't after her; he just wants to kill.
Yeah, that's actually something I've always said: is Michael Myers can exist without Laurie Strode, but Laurie Strode can't exist without Michael Myers. And I'm not going to lie to you; I am sick to death of seeing her, and a lot of the lines that I'm seeing from the trailers are pretty cringy.
Yeah, I mean, and I get it. I'm willing to like open up personally with the movie and say, I'm here to see where you guys take it. But I do get that. Like I said, I like how you guys, you know, just follow the police department more or less. And the hunt for Michael Myers, you've put the focus back on him. And I really enjoyed him weaving in and out of all of these different situations, like going into the houses and the murders he's doing along the way. Like he can't even help himself to stop killing and go hide, you know?
Yeah. You know,
the gore was really well done.
We kind of feel like we take Michael Myers as like say he's a Grand Theft Auto character that's just like screwing around. Like I know that kind of inspired us because I mean, he's really doing nothing. Like he has no purpose but to kill. And then these characters are just wrapped around that, you know?
Yeah, and
that's where every sequel has gone wrong because the whole sister element is terrible and the niece and he's got to kill his bloodline. Like the minute you put that on there, there's no longer any real terror to the character. It's like, oh, so he has to complete his mission. So we like you said, the Grand Theft Auto thing, it's better when he's not following the mission. He's just going around killing prostitutes. Like that's what we want to see because that's what's scary, not I have to do this because then there's like a thought process to it. But my brother actually found yesterday, a couple days ago, that they released a scene from Halloween 5 where he floats down the river and finds like a voodoo doctor or something doing witchcraft. Yeah. And like, I watched it and Michael Myers is stumbling around and grabbing on tree branches. And it's like, it's so human and so ridiculous that it takes away everything from the character. Because then you imagine without the mask on doing, then you're like, yeah, this is just some dumb guy floating around the river. But and then you put the mask on, which makes it even more absurd. And you're like, I don't know what's going on here. Like, why? Who thought that this was okay? And who? I don't know.
Yeah, but no, I say this. I agree. You know, I agree. Every once in a while, I love 3. And sometimes at Halloween time, I'll watch 4. But that's generally where I kind of stop it. You know, I do have a Halloween 6 poster, but that's for completely different reasons.
What's actually funny that I've noticed is all of the good Halloween films are the same movie. Halloween 1, he escapes the mental asylum, goes home and kills. Halloween 4, he escapes the ambulance, goes home, starts killing. Halloween 2018, he escapes the asylum, goes home and starts killing. It's like, just follow, like they did that with 21 and 22 Jump Street. They were funny about it, that just do the exact same thing because it worked. Mm-hmm. And with Halloween, like, don't try to explain Michael Myers because it doesn't come off interesting. You know what's kind of crazy is they're releasing scene like behind-the-scenes stills and, like, images from the movie, and there's one where Michael Myers is sitting in Judith's chair. Did you see that one?
No. Really?
Yeah, he's looking in the mirror where Judith was killed, and it's crazy because we had an idea that Michael Myers goes back to the sanitarium – the asylum where he was – assuming that it was closed out at this point, which it wasn't. And we were like, yeah, what if he's walking around the halls and he's having like visions of him as a kid? And then we thought, well, Michael Myers really isn't nostalgic like that. But then we see in this movie they're doing that too. And it's like, damn, like maybe we should have done that.
Yeah, it'd be an interesting, you know, because when you go back to like the Rob Zombie movies, the backstory, I didn't mind the backstory, but it also took away from the, you know, actual who Michael Myers was for me. So by the time we got to the remake portion, I was like, kind of don't care.
There's no mystery. And I've always said this, and people like what they like, but you can't take a character's origin and what they are and change it and call it the same thing. Like you can't make Batman a poor guy who wears a pink bunny suit and still call him Batman because that's not Batman anymore. I mean, a lot of people say this, like with the Zack Snyder version, like Batman's one rule is not to kill, and then he's killing everybody in that movie. So it's kind of like, I don't know if this really works, but when you make Michael Myers an androgynous little boy that wears Metallica shirts and says F you to his principal, it's like, I don't find any fear in this kid anymore. Like, I get why he's a killer. Like, I'd be a killer too. Like,
yeah,
of course he's a killer. Like, everyone's a dick to the kid. His parents are terrible. His mom's a prostitute. His stepdad's abusive. Like, well, I mean, yeah, he's a killer. Why wouldn't he be a killer? I think most of us would be a killer.
Yeah, and it's great points too. And so let me get into it with you about horror films. You know, you guys have been doing this a while. I've seen, I haven't watched your shorts. I'm very excited to, because I really enjoyed Inferno. But yeah, you guys have been doing this since you're real young. Where do you want to take it next? Like, going into filmmaking with horror, do you want to create some more of your own characters, like you did in previous shorts, or, where do you want to go now?
Vince?
Actually, that's a good question. The feature film we've been working on, The Burned Over District, that's kind of taken a lot of inspiration from the new, like, A24 movies, like Hereditary, Midsommar. We love the classics too, like Pet Sematary and stuff like that. So we tried to kind of like combine all those ideas together, and that's where our newest feature is going. It's kind of completely separated from like the slasher genre, but yeah.
It's separated, but it has its influences without a doubt. I think the best way to say it is, like, we, over the years, so when we were kids, obviously, you know, Jason and Freddy and Michael Myers are the coolest things ever. But as you get older and you start to really understand film more, you kind of become a snob. And I'm sure you as a film lover, you're a scene snob. So, like, as it goes on, you're like, oh, so now we're becoming to a point where we're trying to make movies for pretentious people. And maybe we're becoming a little pretentious on our own. But we want to incorporate those, like, really, you know, that slow, brooding, I guess, like, psychological horror and then physical horror and gore. And we kind of put it all into one movie. And it's the kind of movie that will really, like, subvert your expectations, because it starts one way, then it goes another way, and then it goes another way, and then it goes a completely other way. And it's going to be one of those things where you're like, I don't really see where any of this is coming from, but I like it. It's kind of like – it's like a slow burn horror, like, ghost story movie. Then it's a cult movie. Then it's a revenge movie. And then it's like a – what's the word? I would say like a cosmic horror movie out of nowhere. So it's literally like, let's just take every insane idea we have and throw it at this movie. And that's kind of what we did. And it's very gory. I'll tell you that. There's a lot of, there's a lot of crazy kills in it.
Well, I hope you guys think of us, to do another interview when you guys have it out. I would love to, talk about it some more. It sounds amazing.
I'll say this. Are you a fan of Mandy?
Mandy was my favorite movie of 2018.
Yeah, so it has a lot of – we took a lot of influence from Mandy as well. As far – I'd say more like a visual style. It has a lot of that, but it also has a lot of visual style of, like, again, like an A24 film, because it starts off very, very, like, grounded, very slow, and then it gets just it goes nuts. And I think that's going to be – I love movies like that where you're like, what the hell's going on? Like, how did I get to this point? And I'm trying to think of a movie. Like, it's like – what's his name? Elijah Wood. All of his movies are kind of like that. You're just like, how the hell did we get to this point?
Hey, listen, take it to him. Show him. Let him put it out there and distribute it for you, because that sounds awesome. I like where horror has kind of been going, like the Mandy's, the Color of Space, you know, Elijah Wood's company doing it. Like, it ramps up real hardcore. And I'm not usually a fan of gore, but I'm not a fan of gore porn. That makes sense. If the gore makes sense in the story, like Mandy, I'm in. That's fine with me. I don't care. Like, that's, you know, the ultra violence, you know, that completely makes sense in a movie like that. You know, something like, you know, Saw, it's like, which I'll still watch from time to time. I'm not against them or anything, but, you know, it's like, there's no real story here. That's kind of what I mean. You know,
I definitely think it gets gratuitous. It's actually, you just made me think of something. We were adamant when we did Inferno not to do Myers porn. And what we mean by that is a lot of fan films you see and a lot of the sequels you see, and I'm saying this, Halloween Kills looks like it, is called Myers porn, where all you see is Michael Myers and every shot, everything he does, and he's killing everybody, and it's like overstimulating. And we try to bring Michael Myers back to like a mystery where you don't see where he's coming from and everything like that. But Yeah, that's what we call Myers porn. It's just an overusage of Michael Myers in the movies. Instead of keeping the monster in the shadows, you just kind of throw him out there and let him go nuts.
Yeah, I completely agree about that. When movies are too gory, it almost starts to go into like the B-horror genre, and we try to really stay away from that. We just need to we showed it when it was necessary. I think we did a good job on that part. Like, there's even ways you can film like gore and stuff in movies that can make it look cheaper. And it really helps that Mike Del Rosa, the special effects artist in this movie, is he really knows how to shoot his effects so they don't look cheesy. So we don't want to go into that territory.
But. Well, you know, for something like this, and you're coming in, you're preparing for it, you're going to do a Michael Myers film. I love that, first of all, that, you know, it's in the Myers porn. I do like that a lot, like, because they did that so much in all of these sequels, and he was so... You know, watching the first Halloween again in theaters past few years, I'll go and watch it, and just to see him pop up in new places in the background. It's like he's barely in that movie, but he's actually in it throughout the entire thing. But you have to look for him. You guys did that really well, like, because you did have a good amount of violence, of course, too, and gore to it, but it wasn't all the time. It wasn't nonstop in your face. Like, there was the stalking, and it led up very nicely. You guys paced this really well. I got to give you a lot of credit for that. And that's a really good trait of good filmmaking. So definitely be proud of yourselves for that one, for sure.
Well, thank you. That's actually something that kind of pushed us away from the Rob Zombie movies, is we felt like Michael Myers is always kind of like a clean ninja-type killer, and then in the Rob Zombie movies, he's like mutilating people and screaming, and it's like, this is it cut, you know what I mean? Like, it's getting kind of like gratuitous and just kind of it goes off the wall, and it doesn't feel true to the character. Like, I never thought Michael Myers was like fetishizing killing. It was more just like almost like a lion. Like, it's just something he's innately there to do.
So for you guys, taking Halloween and Michael Myers out of it, tell me some more about some horror movies that you really, you know, gravitate towards, maybe growing up when you were younger, that really pulled you into the genre.
Well, first off, I can go back to the classics. Evil Dead was extremely influential. If you go back like 10 years on our channel, you can see an Evil Dead type fan film we did. It's called Incomprehensible. And we've been trying, because the effects artist Mike Del Rosa is a huge Evil Dead fan. We actually just went and saw the 40th anniversary? Yeah, 40th anniversary of Evil Dead in theaters a couple days ago with him. And he keeps telling us he's going to write an Evil Dead short film, and we've been begging him to do it because we really want to make one. Oh, we also did another one called Buried in the Woods. We have a feature script out there somewhere that we wrote called Buried in the Woods, and it's like an Evil Dead type film. And one day maybe we'll do that. That would just be very expensive. So someday.
That's just
Amityville Horror was one. Pet Cemetery. I don't know, Ben's got any to add there.
Oh yeah, all the John Carpenter movies, you know, the Thing, that's a big one.
Thank you. Yeah. Christine.
I think at such a young age, we gravitated toward movies that looked like they were easy to do, and Halloween 1, you know, is just a guy in a mask and a jumpsuit. So we were always like, we can make that. And we like movies that are, we like all kinds of horror movies, but I mean, obviously, like the classics, Pet Sematary, Halloween, Christine. We really like the John Carpenter. Like, we love John Carpenter's pacing. Like, Halloween 1 is like definitely the best paced film, but nowadays I don't think it really holds up because people get bored easily. But yeah, I mean, I can't really think of
unless you're a snob.
True.
I'm trying to think. I mean, like, more modern horror movies. I mean, I'm saying like more modern stuff. Like, we obviously love, I thought Hereditary was incredible. Have you seen The Dark and the Wicked?
Yeah, actually, we had Michael Abbott Jr. on the show from that movie. He is such a slow burn, but it's really well done. The creep factor.
Oh, it was absolutely an incredible horror film. Like, those are the type of horror films I think, like, that's where horror is going. And I think it's really cool because I think our generation is now becoming like, they're kind of coming into their own as far as filmmakers. Like, you have like Robert Eggers and I just forgot the Hereditary's director,
Ari Aster.
And like, you see like people around our, well, they're older than us, but I'm saying like more so like the 80s, 90s generation is now getting into their like 30s and 40s. And I think that's an interesting thing, because I think we're able to put out what we saw as kids and kind of what we've experienced growing up, and you see an interesting take on horror now. And everything A24 does, I think, is incredible too. Like, we just watched The Black Coat's Daughter a couple months ago, which I thought was really cool too. I'm trying to think. It's weird on the spot. Have you seen the film Martyrs? Martyrs is a really,
that's really good, too.
We
feel like you need to know all these movies and keep up with the modern horror films to keep up in this business, because you, you know, if you don't, you'll just be making something that was made in the 80s. You have to have like a horror movie IQ to get better ideas than the movies you just watched in 2019. You know what I mean? I feel like that's really important.
We're trying to avoid, like, there's one thing we hate more than anything. It's the overdone Hollywood horror films. Like, the recent Conjuring was terrible, but like at a technical level, like, oh yeah, the lighting's great and the camera movements are great, but the film itself is just like, everything's ridiculous. Like, every Exorcist movie lately is the same. It's like, oh, I think you're possessed. Oh, we can't stop it. Let's call a priest. He can't stop it. Oh, we finally saved him. Oh, he's still alive, though, and someone else now. It's like they all go to the same route, and it's like nothing new. You know exactly how it's going to end. And like the overdone lighting, there's no atmosphere whatsoever, and it just feels like a set the whole time. Like, that's one thing I really can't stand, and I really hate how horror, at least mainstream horror, has kind of gone that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's funny you say that, because so true. Like, a lot of the supernatural, I would say, do go that way, where especially when they're revisiting in sequels, like you said, The Exorcist and things like that. But then you go back to the slasher, you go back to like the Michael Myers, and it is like it's a reverse. It's almost, we want the basic when it comes to them. Like you said, like all the ones that did well were the ones where you escape the mental hospital, goes on killing spree, you know, and that's what we all love. But yeah, like you watch The Exorcist, how many times can you redo that movie, you know, and they did it as a show and everything else. It's like, I think the supernatural especially is something we can't handle being redone over and over and over again, if that makes sense. But slashers hold up. We love those characters, I think, more than we love the story.
Yeah. I've always thought, and we've always discussed this, I feel like as Halloween fans, we over-glamorize Michael Myers. We have this image of what he is, but then when you actually watch the movies, you're like, these are all kind of terrible. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love them, but they're terrible. Aside from, honestly, the first one and maybe 2018, they're all kind of terrible. With, like, glimpses of good stuff, but, like, you see Michael Myers looking like a hockey player, or he looks like Nicolas Cage, or he's radically changing in size, or he's... As much as I know this is going to be a sin to Halloween people, but Halloween 2, we watched it recently because our friend had never seen it, and even I was like, man, this sucks.
Yeah, it does.
It's very slow. It's Laurie Strode crawling around the floor the whole time, and it's like, this really is not a good movie.
Yeah.
And as a fan, I can admit that. Like, and I feel like as fans, we need to be honest with ourselves. Like, we've always, like, again, we've romanticized Michael Myers as this amazing things, and then – he's never been that until now. Now he's finally what we've romanticized him to be.
Yeah, absolutely. I love your answers too. And I do like that you, I don't hear this from a lot of younger filmmakers that I talk to, say like you have to embrace the new stuff. Cause a lot of the younger filmmakers like grew up in the 80s and 90s want to go right back. They want to revisit the 80s. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. And, you know, everything, you know, is, you know, just kind of what you're into at the moment. But I do think we need to start being more respectful towards the new movies coming out and what they do. Like, stop holding on to this. It's all love for the 80s. That's when horror movies were the best. Let's face facts. Like, it wasn't, like, there was a lot of crap that came out in the 80s. That wasn't that great, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think we need to have more love for the 70s. I think we need to have more love for the later 90s, early 2000s, and what that did for horror, you know, and so on and so forth. So I do like that you guys are adopting that and you know, keep your finger to the pulse, really, of what's going on.
We actually grew up in the 2000s. Like, we were 2000s kids. So, I mean, we were in, like, a really kind of bad era for horror, because that was, like, One Missed Call and Gothica and all these, like, every single movie, like, the bad guy was, like, this, like, glitchy edited kind of, like, ghost or whatever. I don't know, whatever you would want to call it. And like, I don't know, there was a lot of bad ones. Like, I remember there was like an internet. What was that movie with the internet demon? What the heck was that called?
And I remember there was one called Fear.com.
Yeah, I remember Fear.com. No. See, when I was a kid, it scared me. And now I watch it, and I'm like, this sucks.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The 2000s when they were like kind of getting away from like the CW vibe, which don't get me wrong, I'm not saying it's the best either. But when they were getting away from that type of look and feel, yeah, they didn't really have a direction to go until Paranormal Activity was like, let's do this. You know?
Yeah. Well, I actually think a really great film from the early 2000s is The Ring.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But I would say there were ones that, like, set that bar, and there were so many missing. You know, like, the those were all ones that were trying to reach that ring, and it just wasn't going to hit.
Yeah, but, and there were so many films. Like, I remember going to see The Grudge. It was, like, The Grudge 10. I don't know which one it was. We saw with our friends in theaters, and we were kids. We were, like, laughing. It was hysterical. It's like, every single movie had some creepy long-haired girl crawling around the floor, and it's like, just stop being scary. So many years ago, and they're still doing it.
Well, since you guys are fans, let me ask you real quick, what are some of your favorite on-screen deaths in horror movies?
That's Vince, a good
one. You go first.
This is going to take me a minute.
No, take your time. I, of course, always go back to, you know, Jason with the sleeping bag up against the tree. It's always a fun one for me. Anything Freddy did, I thought was really well done filmmaking wise, especially when Craven was at the helm. You know,
I would definitely say the first time on Elm Street and then A New Nightmare. Again, that's another one. Like, I feel like Freddy became such a satire of himself, it kind of took away from everything they did in the first one.
Yeah. 100%. So we lose you? We can still hear you. Okay, good.
Am I back? Okay, I'm back. Sorry.
Stuff like that, like, yeah, as you think about them, let me know what you guys think. I do have a game plan for you guys. I'm going to put you up here because you guys are going to go head-to-head on this one. Get a point for everyone you get correct. Whoever raises their hand first gets to answer first. How's that sound?
Yeah.
Good.
All right, we're going to do, which Myers mask is it? Let's start off with an easy one.
Halloween Inferno. I'm kidding. Halloween Kills.
I'm going to have to get on James's because I'm not on the Wi-Fi, so let me just get next to him.
Okay.
That's okay.
Yeah, no. Take your time. I will give this one to James, though.
Is it weird that we're in the same room? Same house? All right, hold on. Favorite, here's a good on-screen kill, is the one in Hellraiser where the guy's all hooked up to the, in the first Hellraiser, he's hooked up to all the hooks and then it like rips him apart. That was a pretty good one.
Yes, that is a great one. Absolutely. So, James, that's your point for Halloween Kills. All right.
There's a chair right there.
I'll let you, you take your time. I got no rush. All right, here's the next one. Remember, raise your hands. Whoever answers first, whoever raises their hand first gets to answer. All right, what you got?
That is H2O. It's a K&B mask.
Oh, there you go. One and one, neck and neck. What we got?
Can't see it.
Rob Zombie.
Wait, I'm going to say it's the first one. Rob Zombie's first remake.
That is correct. 2007. Can I give that one
a chance? As a young kid in high school, I was so disappointed when I left that movie.
Yeah, that one hurt a little bit.
Halloween,
what you got here?
Halloween 2, 1981.
Boom. Ooh, I don't know. Come on, man. Vince, you got to get on this. James, run away with it. There you go. There you go. What is it?
It's Halloween 6.
Boom.
I like the goblin mask. I think it's cool. I got to admit, Halloween 6 mask is pretty cool.
It got, but yeah, after what they did in 4 and 5, for sure, they came back to it.
Yeah.
Halloween 4.
Boom. That's neck and neck. 3-3. Here we go.
I think that's, isn't that the Pillsbury Doughboy? That's 2018, without a doubt.
Yep. Very nice, man. You guys are real close here. All right, what we got?
Halloween Resurrection. That's Dangertainment.
Dangertainment. I had to throw it in there.
Halloween 5.
Isn't that from Mandy?
Oh, my God. It does look like Nicolas Cage. What we got here?
Halloween 1.
That's the OG.
Original.
All right. You guys are tied 5-5. And we're coming up on some tiebreakers, so.
I'd rather I decline to answer.
That's Rob Zombie's Halloween 2.
Well, Vince takes it out of the lead. The bad one, as I had to put it.
Yeah, what were they doing there?
Oh yeah,
it's a trickster.
That's from that amazing Halloween Inferno I've seen before. Yeah. I don't know. What do you think? Do you think the Inferno mask might be better than the Kills mask?
So far, yeah. And I'm not exaggerating that. I would tell you if I didn't like it. But, like, looking at that, it doesn't look bad. But I guess it might be wet, too. But I like what you guys did. And I also like that you guys kept it burnt. You know, you went with it. You really rolled with the storyline. And I dug that a lot. I really appreciate a timeline that you guys created here. It was really good. You guys actually you're tied. So you know your masks. For sure. So congratulations on that.
You should do a Jason one. I think we might not know that one that good.
Well, we might have to bring you guys back on anytime. We always have a good time here. So anytime you want to be on. I do want to show this poster. And I want to say, you know, it's available to check out now. Halloween Inferno. You have the shirt on there, James. And it's truly beautiful artwork. For sure. Listen, if you start selling those shirts, let me know. I'll buy one. But yeah, I want to thank you guys for being on today. I had a lot of fun. You guys know your horror and I always appreciate that, talking to people. So where can, now is it for purchase, Halloween Inferno?
Yep. You could buy it on our website. You can get the Blu-ray and that's the Boogeyman cut, which is all three films put together.
Nice. That's the one I watched. Yeah. I really enjoyed it. And I'm glad that I got to see everything right off the bat. You know, like not wait and watch the first one, then the second one, the third one. I need the whole story right there. I go crazy. That's why, like, yeah. Halloween Kills and Ends, I'm like, stop pushing them back. I need the
story. It's funny because if you originally Halloween Inferno 1 and 2, they're not in chronological order. So everyone was confused about it. I'm like, we're just keeping up with the Halloween theme of nothing making any sense.
Yeah. Well, you know, I very much interested. Are you done with it? Or might there be a return? I know you're working on your feature now, so it's, you know, a little bit different, but could you see a return to Michael Myers in the future?
Here's the truth. We always say no, but then when that October breeze blows ever so slightly, you just feel that Myers in your bones. I mean, look, we have an idea for Inferno 4, but I say this, we keep bashing these sequels because eventually it's just going to be, what is it? Michael Myers killing people more. And I don't know. Like what really can keep going?
I guess we could say this. Let's see where Halloween Kills takes it. Cause they said like he ascends every time he kills. And if they get into the story a little deeper, I think that'll be the deciding factor.
Yeah. He's going to go Super Saiyan.
And is there another horror iconic character that you wouldn't mind maybe doing another short on? I know you said Evil Dead, but like, is there like an iconic character you wouldn't mind like taking the helm on?
So this is actually something we wanted to do for Halloween, but I don't know if we're going to have enough time, is we actually have a treatment for a Christine short.
Oh.
So that's kind of in the cards right now. Like that's something that's going to happen. Just maybe not for Halloween, but probably sometime soon.
That's always been one of my favorites. And we know a really good car guy, so it might happen.
Yeah. We actually already have the car picked out.
I love it. Please do it. Please.
But as far as an icon, I think Michael Myers is really our biggest one that we're really obsessed with. I mean, anybody else, like, probably not going to do a Hellraiser one because that would be like an insane budget. But
I think people would be shocked to hear we're not necessarily the biggest slasher fans. And I think it's because we latched on to Michael Myers so early on. And I mean, controversial opinion, Michael Myers is the Ultimate Slasher. He's the original, and he's the best. And we say that because Michael Myers is the only one that is pure evil, if that makes sense. Jason has a reason. Leatherface has a reason. And Freddy Krueger is just kind of gross.
Oh, wait. Back to your best on-screen deaths. This is a weird one. Probably the Final Destination 2 scene. Remember that?
Which one?
Where the cars are all crashing and the log goes through the car and all that stuff. Like, that was insane. Like, that actually messed me up. Like, I was like, this is, like, gone too far. Like, this is, like, real.
Oh, wait, no. A really good one is the Thing blood scene, too.
Yeah.
When the guy's, like, up on the roof and all that.
But both of those are really iconic death scenes. Like, tell me you don't pass a log truck and you don't think about that movie. There's nobody who doesn't think about that movie.
Exactly. Every single time.
I would say, honestly, Christine is iconic, is an iconic character. And that's, you don't see any short films. There's one short film made about Christine, and John Carpenter did it. So that tells you. I would love to see a short film done about Christine. And then come back on, and then we're going to sit and we're going to talk about it, because I
love it. And, I know that Blumhouse has been talking about doing one, and, I mean, what perfect time would it be if we dropped one, and they're like, hey, we need a director for it, and they saw that, and they're like, oh, these guys also did Inferno, and as much as I don't want to say this, but there's no way that people at Blumhouse didn't see Inferno. There's no way it didn't come by someone's desk, and they're like, wow, this is really good, because I even saw a leaked video, and they had a burning pumpkin in the opening. I read that there's an eye gouge scene, and he puts a flashlight through someone's head. I'm like, what? Come on now.
Really?
Yeah, I read that.
Go. I'm telling you, reach out to him. Reach out to Blumhouse and you know, just say, listen, we made this. If you like it, you know, we're here. We're available. You know, because he does. I know Jason Blum likes to help, you know, young filmmakers get a start. You know, so we got to lose. I would love to see that. I think you guys are really talented. I think you guys know the genre. And I'm very excited to see what you do with the Burned Over District. And to talk about that more once that comes out. And if you need any help with promoting or anything, please let us know. We'd be happy to help you out here.
We would greatly appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I appreciate you guys coming on, playing our games and stuff like that. And anytime you want to come on and talk horror or talk movies in general, you're always welcome here at Scene Snobs. James and Vincent, go check out Halloween Inferno. They made three great short films that go together perfectly for a feature. It's about 45 minutes long, which I will say it's just paced really well. And if you add to it, it would still work, I think. You know, because you really did a seamless job all the way through, especially with the gaps in between filming. Testament to truly good filmmakers. So congratulations on having it come out. And I heard about it through friends, and that's a big thing, because I'm, you know, stick to the horror community, keep my ear to the ground. Some people have been talking about it, so it's really great on you. I really appreciate it, and I really like doing the movie, and I appreciate having you on today.
Yeah, thank you for having us. We had a great time.
For sure. And again, anytime, we'd love to have you. So the Burned Over District, you're filming that now. Any help we can give you, happen to do it. But are you guys doing any crowdfunding for that right now?
So we actually wrapped filming on it. We're actually in post-production. Oh. We probably will try to do some kind of crowdfunding, because we have a lot of visual effects work and sound and music. And yeah, it's going to be a lot. So at some point, probably.
All right. Well, you just let us know, and we'll be there to help out. I can't wait to see it. So thank you again, James, Vincent. This is awesome. Your movie's awesome. And I had a lot of fun talking to you today.
All right. Yeah. Thanks again.
Thank you for having us on.
Thanks for watching, everybody, and listening. You can check out the Scene Snobs podcast every Tuesday live on 9 p.m. Follow us at the Scene Snobs. You know, go to thescenesnobs.com. That's where everything is. You guys know that. And we will talk to you guys later. Thanks for watching, everybody. I'm Mick Manhattan, the Scene Snob, and you can check out the Scene Snobs podcast live every Tuesday at 9 p.m. Eastern, or you can check it out on any podcast platform or our YouTube channel anytime after that. Thank you to our Patreon supporters. Without you, this wouldn't be possible. If you guys want to join, check us out over on thescenesnobs.com. We have links for everything. The Scene Snobs merch store is open. You can check that out too. Links again on the site. Or like, follow, and subscribe on all of our social media. Again, head over to thescenesnobs.com. It's all there for you guys. Love you, and we'll talk to you guys soon.